hear a review of The Wolverine.
We sent a SWAT team deep into the heart of MIF to retrieve just one film review, and we managed to extricate Josh Nelson. We've lost Thomas Caldwell forever, I think. He's gone mad in the wilderness of movies. Josh, thanks so much for coming back to reality.
Good morning.
And you've brought a high art film for us this morning?
I have. Deeply intellectual. This is the avant-garde of the avant-garde. The Wolverine.
All right. Hey. It's about like a thing, right? An animal with steel claws.
Something like something. That. Yeah. With Hugh Jackman, as I've started calling him.
Yeah.
This is the sixth X-Men or X-Men spin-off / prequel. In fact, Jackman's the only character, the only actor who's been in all of them. Right. He had a cameo in the... In the last one, which was a prequel, and which is also a lead into the next one. And this film is sort of a bridging film between the third of the X-Men films, which is bloody awful, which was the Brett Ratner film. And it forgets that the Wolverine Origins film, the film Jackman made a couple of years ago, doesn't really exist, which he's sort of since come out and said, yeah, that was actually pretty disappointing, so I wanted to do another one. And I'm kind of glad to say that this one works. This one's actually really good.
Okay.
And it's about time, because the blockbusters this... Well, American Summer, Our Winter, have been pretty ordinary, I reckon.
What others have there been?
Oh, Man of Steel, Pacific Rim, you know, all the films that Caldwell was really kind
on.
Really I've been pretty ruthless about. So, and the thing that I think really works about this Wolverine film is it actually has a story, you know, shock horror, about time that Hollywood actually realised that you can actually have a story and still have the kind of big blockbuster set pieces.
What's the story?
Well, it's based on a 1982 comic book run by Frank Miller and Chris Claremont. So it goes back to sort of Wolverine's or an early Wolverine origin story where he's sort of struggling in the wilderness. He gets picked up by a sort of a Japanese girl who says, you need to fulfill a promise that you made to a man many years ago. And we realize that this is a Japanese soldier that Wolverine saved at the bombing of Nagasaki, who he sort of promised to one day come back before and see again before he died. So he ventures to Japan and gets caught in this sort of this intrigue or this narrative of intrigue between the Yakuza, between corporations, and between this sort of family internal conflict in this sort of this Japanese sort of dynasty family. You know, one of the key sort of things that I think drives this film, and look, the Wolverine character is pretty much the same in most of them. It's the and it really is kind of rooted in Japanese mythology, because Wolverine is kind of a Ronin figure. He's that you know, the sort of the samurai who's lost his master, that sort of roaming from place to place looking for work, looking for some sort of, you know, existential answer. And we see that sort of played out here. But in this context, I think it's about the question of immortality, and is it a burden that Wolverine's prepared to bear anymore, or is he going to give it away? And of course, this Japanese master, this dying friend, sort of says, you know, this is my gift to you. I'm going to take the burden from you. And of course, Wolverine says, well, you know, I kind of like it, actually. So that's the crux of the film. But the narrative itself is a really nice, slow burn. It introduces the characters one by one, the conflicts and the interrelationships, rather than just being a series of sort of action set pieces. Mm. Well, that said, there is some really great set pieces in this. There's one on a Shinkansen, on a bullet train, where Wolverine's on the top and he's sort of fighting off a series of sort of ninjas, basically. And every time he sort of leaps up in the air, he has to dig his claws back into the roof of the train to sort of stop himself from flying off. And it's actually, I mean, apart from the fact that it's quite overtly sort of CGI, it's really sort of, engaging. It's a really nice sort of set piece. But, like, the performances across the board are really nice. The director is sort of a strange choice, James Mangold, who's done films like Walk the Line, Copland many years ago with Stallone.
Yeah, that was a good one.
So he's a curious decision, because he's not really the big blockbuster action director, but he brings the focus on character to this film.
I was going to say, it sounds like the character and the relationships are good. Is the dialogue good?
Well, one thing that I was worried about, and this is always a concern when you get a film set in a country like Japan, is how much are they going to play on the sort of Asian exoticism and, you know, this notion of the cultural other. But the characters, for the most part, the Japanese characters, speak in Japanese, which I think is a really wise decision. And it's quite respectfully done in terms of a cultural setting, despite the fact that most of the film was actually shot in Sydney. Yeah. So this is one of the big blockbuster films that got that Jackman lobbied the Australian government to get the tax break.
$1 billion.
So the dialogue's actually not too bad. My one sort of criticism of this film, and I think most people will probably feel similar, is the villain Bendis plot in this is a little bit convoluted. It's sort of the Dr. Evil, you know, when he concocts this, you know, sharks with frickin' laser beams attached to their heads. It's like, well, you seem to have gone to quite a lot of trouble where you could have actually sort of just cut to the chase quite early. So if you don't think about the whole plot and the twists that sort of take place, then maybe you'll go with it. I mean, that was sort of a minor criticism because from a visual point of view, from a narrative point of view, I thought it was pretty engaging. So it was kind of nice to see a film that doesn't sort of talk down to its audience. It's actually willing to sort of say, you know what, we're going to spend the first 40 minutes of this film just setting up the character drama and then we'll move into the action as the film develops.
Well, can I just ask you, because I'm not familiar with the X-Men series or Wolfman, but is he constantly walking around dressed
shirtless
in the hair thing, or is he human then become a wolf?
He is rocking some pretty good sideburns, and Jackman. Oh, geez, Jackman, he's just huge. He really is huge, Ackman.
Like, as in built.
Yeah, he's massive, and he gets his shirt off a number of times. There was a discussion after this film saying, you know, between the different genders of film critics saying, is he hot or not? And I'm definitely in there. He is super
hot.
He is.
Oh, God.
And people complain and say, but he's old. He's in his 40s. And I'm like, hey, I wished I could look that good when I get to my 40s. So, no, he's not covered in hair all the time.
Right.
And he keeps his claws kind of concealed except for when he gets angry.
But they're always there.
They're always there. Okay. They're concealed underneath the skin. The
but one it's thing not I- like scissor hands.
Right.
Yeah. Because I'm sure when you're scissor hands. Over
the one thing I should say, in case people are a bit turned off if they haven't seen the other X-Men films, is it works as a standalone
film.
Yeah,
right.
Good. So there's only brief references made to the earlier films. I saw this with my sister who'd never seen any of the X-Men films, and she wasn't lost at all. She completely sort of got what was going
okay,
on.
Okay, so I could walk in and see. It was basically the point as well.
Good. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. Well, Josh Nelson from Plato's Cave.
Yep.
And talking about Myth so far. All right, thanks so much for coming in.
Cheers, guys.